people are ready, willing, and able to accept UFO reality. I would certainly agree with the Gallup poll showing that the majority of adult Americans do believe in UFOs, that the older the individual, the less likely to believe, that the more educated, the more likely to believe. I find that people don't believe the government's told them the whole story. There's nothing surprising about that, I guess. But that was even true 8 or 9 years ago, long before Watergate. And frankly, I'm also convinced that we're dealing with a kind of cosmic Watergate here. I find that UFO sightings are really quite common. Everybody's surprised at the end of my lecture when I ask how many people have seen a UFO, something I would consider, and my standards are fairly tight. And invariably, you get anywhere from 3 to 10% of the people attending, and that's as many as 2,000 people, raising their hands. Usually, initially, they raise them very reluctantly until I start counting out loud and they realize they're not the only ones, as each one seems to think he is. But then I ask, how many of you reported what you saw? And if I'm lucky, it's 1 in 20 of those who have seen it. The whole history of science, say for the last 100 years, is full of pronouncements. In 1903, it was proven by a great astronomer that one couldn't fly in an airplane, only a lighter than aircraft could move in the sky. In the mid-20s, a professor proved that you couldn't get to escape velocity, too much energy would be required. In the early 40s, the head of the Canadian Astronomical Association clearly mathematically demonstrated that if you wanted to get a man to the moon and back, the initial launch weight would have to be only a million tons. He, of course, did it with 3,000 tons, so he was off 1,000 million, that's how much he was off in his weight factor. In 1957, Dr. Lee DeForest, who invented the vacuum tube, father of modern electronics, great man, stated that the notion that man would go soon to the moon, would land, get back alive to Earth with samples for analysis here, that notion was the wildest science fiction worthy of a Jules Verne. He was bold enough to state that no matter what the discoveries of the future, that would never happen. It took 12 years. So you'd think that we'd learn by looking backwards how to look forwards. And you know, if there were no other reasons for studying UFOs, the technological, pragmatic ones are certainly worth the effort.
That was nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman, an early UFO researcher, speaking to a 1975 seminar at the University of California in Berkeley. Friedman was the first civilian to document the site of the so-called Roswell UFO incident. This time on the Plutopia podcast, John and Scoop welcome two distinguished experts to the show.
Hey, welcome to the Plutopia News Network. This is John Lebkowski, and my co-host is here with me, Scoop Sweeney. Hello, Scoop.
Hello, Scoop. Oh, no, that's me. Hello, John.
And our guests today are John Lebkowski and Scoop Sweeney, which is us.
Yep, that's us, and we're going to babble at you. This is what we do when we just feel like it. We have grand plans, or at least semi-grand. I don't know how grand our plans are.
Well, I mean, now that the erection of Plutopia Towers is done.
We had an erection? I thought someone might complain.
Walk over to the window there and look outside, and you'll see that we're in the penthouse of Plutopia Towers.
And it's quite a nice penthouse. It has hot and cold running water, electricity, all the modern conveniences.
Got hot and cold running co-hosts.
I'm not running right now. Hot and cold sitting co-host.
One thing we were going to talk about today is a new plan we've been percolating, or a new thought we've had. Scoop and I were both big fans of the old Art Bell Coast to Coast radio show.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, and I mean great. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and this is a program called Coast to Coast AM and well beyond. Actually, all the time zones of the world, because that's where we're heard. Great to be here. It's a Friday night, Saturday morning. Going to loosen up a little bit, and boy, are we going to have fun tonight. It's all...
And I guess Coast to Coast is still out there as a radio show and a podcast with a different host. But the thing about Coast to Coast is that there were a lot of discussions on there of what they call paranormal stuff that's like out of the box, you know, it's weird stuff, ghosts, ESP,
cattle mutilation.
Psychic photography.
Don't forget the cattle mutilation. That's one of my favorites. We used to cover that at my job at Zodiac News Service. We loved a good conspiracy, and that was one we got a lot of mileage out of.
But our favorite, I think this is true of both of us. I mean, the one thing that we were really interested in, because it's not completely woo-woo, and that's unidentified flying objects.
UFOs, as some folks refer to them, and it's not out of the realm of actually being a real thing, because there are a lot of people with a lot of, you know, big credentials that have been studying this stuff. We started the broadcast with Dr. Stanton Friedman, who was an early investigator, and he came up with a lot of interesting information that has held up. He survived the test of time, I guess. A lot of his things that I heard from him in my interview with him were still pretty current.
Yeah. And, you know, the original thinking about UFOs, people used to really believe in UFOs, not just lay people, but also government people. And they were not readily dismissed initially, but at some point they were dismissed. And, you know, there may have been reasons for that. The government continued to study them, and were not entirely dismissive of them internally. And my understanding is that they were so concerned about having like many, many piles of reports from people who, as long as everybody was taking it seriously, people would see all sorts of things. And a lot of the reports were things that were really pretty conventional. You know, somebody would see an odd cloud and they'd report it as a UFO. And they didn't want to be deluged with all of these reports, many of which were really not of anything out of the ordinary. And the only reports that they mainly cared about were reports of like maybe enemy aircraft flying into the country or something like that, a clear and visible threat.
Yeah, spotting Vladimir Putin in the lounge at JFK, you know, that might be, and he's not supposed to be there. That's the kind of thing they want. They don't want any wacky UFOs.
Like a giant orange man up in the sky flying over with a jetpack.
Yes, a giant Trump balloon. You know, I'm sure they got plenty of reports on that. And
exactly.
But they also got a lot of reports based upon testing of new military technology. When the stealth fighters were being tested, there were people that spotted those. And it was interesting that they tried to just totally avoid those because they didn't want to go and say, no, that wasn't a UFO. That's our new stealth fighter that we're designing.
It's so, an IFO.
Yeah. We know what it is, so shut the hell up.
Yeah, those were like the mini triangular UFO sightings were probably stealth aircraft.
Yeah, we actually, my wife Clarissa and I were on a trip out to Texas. On our way back, we went through the Mojave Desert, and we actually saw we were near Edwards Air Force Base, I believe, and we actually saw one of the early stealth fighters, you know, taking off. I think it was probably close to being used, but I mean, just seeing that, I can see why people would say, that's a damn UFO, because it was, you know, I live near an Air Force base, so did you. You know, so we saw plane, you know, military aircraft all the time, and it looked nothing like any of those military aircraft I ever saw.
Yeah, we really took that for granted. We took for granted the sounds of jets flying over all the time and sonic booms. They were constantly breaking the sound barrier over our heads
and breaking our windows.
We're both from a little town in Texas that it's kind of out in the desert and had a an air base where actually that air base was used for reconnaissance missions into, I think, South America. I think that was one of the main things they, maybe I'm thinking about the air base they had here in Austin.
Yeah, the one there was a fighter base. It originally was just training. They had, you know, T-33 trainers. That's what we first saw. But they brought in the fighter base that was often a totally separate area of the air base that even the other airmen couldn't get to if they didn't have the right credentials. So, yeah, they had some heavy-duty craft out there.
We used to, one of my fondest memories was going to the open houses they would have out there and, like, crawling through those airplanes.
Yeah.
But they didn't have any UFOs there.
Not that we know of. You know, you never know. Remember, there was a Hangar 18 that was filmed out on that airbase, the sci-fi movie.
And just as an aside there, you can find that thing on YouTube now, and a fairly decent version of it on YouTube. I was actually watching it the other day.
Oh,
it's
really?
A terrible movie. Their budget was probably sort of equivalent to what I paid for my last car.
Yeah, I believe you. I had some of my friends from Big Spring that did, check it out and see what was going on, talk to some of the tech people, and they were all pretty just like, no, we're just doing a low-budget science fiction film. It's not going to be any Fellini masterpiece.
Yeah. Bird did have Darren McGavin in it, though.
Yeah. Pretty much everything like that had Darren McGavin in it in those days.
Well, if it wasn't for Darren McGavin, we may never have had the X-Files, because it was kind of inspired by the Night Stalker series.
I did watch the Night Stalker. Yeah. You know, that was always interesting, to say the least.
But that kind of brings us to a point. There's a pretty large number of people throughout the U.S. and probably throughout the world who are really focused on weird things, unexplained things, and these stories are passed around. And, they may be about Sasquatch, Bigfoot, abominable snowman, those kinds of stories. There's probably something to it, but there's a whole mythology around it too. And there's certainly tons of stories about ghosts and weird supernatural experiences. And you hear about weird creatures people see, Mothman. It's sort of like a subculture with a set of mythologies that they work with. And because it was so readily dismissed by the government and then by the scientific establishment, the UFO phenomenon, whatever it might be, whatever it might represent, and there's some diversity of the kinds of sightings people have, so who knows. But rather than taking a scientific approach to those sightings, mainly the ones that didn't really have any clear explanation. Instead of studying them scientifically, there was this tendency to dismiss them and say, sort of relegate them to that kind of set of subcultures I was talking about. You know, it was another weird thing that people are into if they're a little bit nuts, right up there with like QAnon, maybe, or that kind of thinking, weird conspiracies.
Yeah, the government prefers to dismiss things like that, especially if they are actually looking into it and want to keep these people out of their backyard or their territory, because I've been reading through some of these CIA documents that were released by on a website called the Black Vault. And they got the CIA gave them the CD-ROM that contained all of their sightings and reports and studies of UFOs that they're willing to, you know, to talk about, probably. I think it goes up through about 1996. It starts in the early 50s and goes through the late 90s. And I read some of the documents, and it's pretty obvious they were just irritated that they were having to explain themselves. And that's a fairly standard government response to almost anything, like voting. We don't have to tell you about it. Just go vote, and we'll take care of you. You know how easy that was to deal with.
Well, I guess it changes when the people who tend to be like loony conspiracy theorists start getting elected.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have like in the hundreds of them in legislatures. So that might be one change that we're seeing. Certainly there's been an interest within the political part of government, i.e. elected officials. There have been a number of those people who were interested in learning more or having disclosure, is what they refer to it as in UFO culture. The idea that the government will eventually start disclosing what it actually knows. And in one of the recent COVID stimulus bills, like the first one that they passed, I'm not sure exactly who put it in there, but they added a piece of legislation that required the government to disclose what it knows about UFOs.
Yeah, I found that quite interesting.
Yeah, and that disclosure hadn't really happened yet. There's supposed to be like, I mean, there have been a few things trickling out, but there's supposed to be a more significant report, I think, around June 1st. Mm-hmm. And we have been talking to a UFO, someone who studied UFO phenomena and written about it, who will probably join us around that time to talk about such things, to talk about specifically whatever comes out of that report.
Yeah, I'm sure that they gave them plenty of time so they can go and hide the really incriminating file cabinets. Because in the age of transparency, there's different levels of transparency. Government transparency may or may not be all that transparent, depending on which part of the government you're dealing with. Any of the intelligence agencies, you shouldn't really expect a whole lot of transparency, because that's kind of goes against the whole concept of the intelligence agencies.
Well, but if you read this article, so the New Yorker, the most recent issue of the New Yorker has an article in it called "How the Pentagon Started Taking UFOs Seriously." And it's a pretty interesting article. It was written by Gideon Lewis Krauss, who's one of the writers for the New Yorker. It's a longer investigative report, as they do in the New Yorker. A lot of it, there's a lot in there about Leslie Keen, who has a person who has helped make the investigation of UFOs, especially by journalists, more respectable. She's one of the people who's been writing about UFO phenomenon for the New York Times. And she's also one of the people who's been pushing for disclosure. And there's a lot in there about what the work that she's done and the people that she's worked with, and the kind of research that's been kind of ongoing over a number of years, and especially the research that is more scientific and respectable, and also the actions within government and the thinking within government has been sort of moving toward more transparency about UFOs. And, you know, there was an interview with John Brennan, who used to be the director of the CIA. And he said some of the phenomena we're going to be seeing continues to be unexplained and might in fact be some type of phenomenon that is the result of something we don't yet understand, and that could involve some type of activity that some might say constitutes a different form of life.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation coming from him, of course.
But exactly.
The whole idea of journalism, you know, being able to deal with the subject respectably. I mentioned, you know, the work we did at Zodiac News Service. Yeah, we covered a lot of that stuff. That was back in the early, you know, the entire 70s and the early 80s. And we had, you know, 450 radio stations that subscribed. You know, New York Times subscribed, Rolling Stone, most of the network news organizations got our stuff every day. It was in print. We didn't do audio. We just sent out print services. And my fellow journalists would say, off the record, of course, that they really liked seeing this stuff, but they wish they could do it too. But it all comes down to, if they did it in one of these more conservative, you know, news outlets, the boss would just kill it. Yeah, it would be spiked right away, and they would probably be spiked as well. It, back in those days, news organizations were very, very conservative by most standards. You know, it's just a small number of people in those days that were actually trying to cover something different, say something that was not approved by the conservative views of the time. So yeah, it's nice to be able to look into that, because I'm sure there are a lot of, you know, very wacky people that are just making this stuff up. But there are also a lot of respectable people who just want to let you know about something that they observed that may have been very real. So you kind of have to wade through all these reports to figure out, you know, what's garbage and what's good information.
You know, there, and you think about, like, people wearing tinfoil hats or whatever.
I have
out and making wild claims and so forth. But I've run into a number of people who were not just really serious about what they believe that they saw or experienced, but it scared the hell out of them, and they don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah, that's a common occurrence. You know, Stanton Friedman said in his interview with me that most, you know, he'll have people raise their hand in his lectures. How many of you have seen a UFO? You know, a couple of hundred hands will go up. And he'll say, how many of you actually reported it? And maybe five or six people will raise their hands. And apparently that was pretty much the percentage. Most people don't want to deal with it because they know they're going to be, from the way you see it being treated in the media over the years, they just don't want to be the target of abuse or laughter or ridicule or, you know, whatever, because there are a lot of people who just don't want to hear that stuff.
Indeed. And I'm not sure that I would readily report it if I saw something.
Yeah. Who do you report to?
Well, I probably would. I'm pretty garrulous, and I tend to want to talk about things.
Yeah. Would you call the Austin PD? Do you think they'd...
But there's also, I mean, there's people who believe that they have been abducted by people from UFOs.
I know some.
Or creatures from UFOs or whatever.
I know some people that I suspect were... abducted by UFOs. And
I know a few people I would like to see abducted by UFOs, but that's another story.
I think Donald Trump may be a candidate there. I'm just wondering how he got that
hair.
I
wasn't going to bring him up, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's not human hair. Come on.
No, I ran into a guy when I was part of a company called Fringewear, and we had a store here in Austin. I was working the store one night, and a guy came in. We had a lot of, like, alien weird stuff. There was a guy named Bill Barker who had a sort of art, an aesthetic, really. He referred to it as schwa, and it was depictions of aliens in a very sort of high-tech, glossy kind of aesthetic. And he created like bumper stickers and
I think I still have some of them. I was a Schwab fan for sure.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people know Schwab pretty well. And we carried some of that stuff in our store. And there was a guy there one night who was kind of looking at that stuff. And I got into a conversation with him, and he let me know. He says, "This is not funny." He says, "You know, you shouldn't be putting this kind of stuff out here that is dismissive of the whole thing." And it turns out he had had an abduction experience, and it had scared the hell out of him. And he didn't think it was very cool for people to be sort of like, I don't know, making fun of that kind of experience or kidding about aliens. He said, "You know, it's not a joke."
You know, I can't see making fun of it so much. You know, I might make fun of some of the ones that are obviously just whack jobs. And, you know, it's a temptation I will yield to occasionally. But I like to hear people's stories, and I try not to be judgmental until, you know, they're done with the story, at least.
Yeah. Did you ever read Aboard a Flying Saucer?
No, I missed that.
It was written by a guy named Truman Betheram, and he wrote that he had been taken aboard a saucer by aliens from a planet called Clarion, and I don't know. He had a lot about his conversations, and there was an attractive woman who was like one of the aliens, and I guess the captain of the saucer or whatever. Anyway, it was pretty ridiculous stuff. And there was a lot of that kind of stuff coming out. George Adamski was another guy who wrote a lot of books about UFOs that were really, you know, they were kind of silly. And there would be pictures in there that, you know, really looked like fakes.
Yeah, I saw some of those kind of things that looked like some of the set dressing from some of the really bad early flying saucer movies from the 50s. You could see the little strings hanging down there. Oh, try again, Skippy.
Plan 9 from outer space.
Yeah, that's a good example there. That was a fine work, worthy of Bergman, I think. But, you know, it's like that with any journalistic endeavor. You have to wade through everything. And if you let yourself get prejudiced too early on, you might miss something that was really meaningful. You know, I remember covering stories that initially I thought, do I need to go out to this? And I went ahead and went, and I didn't regret it. I found something that was interesting, either interesting or entertaining. It was worth the trip. And if I were just being, you know, dismissive, it's probably some whack job. I'm going to stay home and, you know, watch Gilligan's Island.
I wonder if Gilligan was kidnapped by a UFO.
I don't know, because
My Favorite Martian.
Yeah, now that, you know, My Favorite Martian, Uncle Martin, was, you know, he was suspicious.
He was a rather pleasant alien, though.
Yeah, now that Will Robinson, you know, I think he was definitely a suspect there. Billy Mumy, I think it's how he's pronounced. He actually turned out to be a pretty decent guy, a punk rocker, and did a lot of cameo appearances in sci-fi TV.
You know, popular culture has given us a lot of sort of, I guess you would call them sort of like iconic ideas, images, tropes, whatever.
Day the Earth stood still.
I mean, just ideas about, I mean, you've watched Star Trek and you've seen Star Trek so many times that you kind of like buy into it and you kind of believe it, you know, and you kind of assume that the day will come when people will be flying around in outer space and we'll meet a lot of aliens, and there'll be like alien cultures that will come together and form federations and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we can all be like Captain Kirk and have wild sex with a green-skinned alien woman. That was always their favorite trope.
I don't think he ever admitted to that, did he?
He didn't have to. Just about every episode, there was some alien woman that just couldn't help but fall in love with the captain, or vice versa.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so we carry these assumptions with us, and it's really become a kind of mythology, something that we really, even though we've seen all of these fictional accounts of things, we sort of believe that they're real. I mean, aside from the outer space stuff, there's also like time travel. People sort of assume that time travel could really be a thing. There's really no evidence of it, but it's common. It's such a common, I'm trying to think of the right word for it, a device, I guess, a common device in forms of science fiction. And we've been exposed to so much of it since science fiction became such a part of our culture that it's kind of easy to believe these things and easy to carry a lot of assumptions about realities that are not really proven or tested. For instance, we don't even know that humans can survive that well in outer space for extended periods of time. And we don't know for sure that you could build a kind of containment where that would be possible. There's a lot that we really don't know about the things that we assume we actually know a lot about.
Well, Elon is going to be counting on his team to come up with all those solutions, because they're planning on going to Mars. And, you know, about the human body being able to survive in space, you know, there are some problems, especially with things like bone loss. And
absolutely. That's just what I was thinking about.
And a change in your equilibrium that is hard to undo once they come back to Earth. It's going to be a challenge, but there are enough people that are willing to put their money up and their time up to go and try and do it. So I'm all for it. Yeah, I've been a space junkie since the very first, since Sputnik went up, when that happened. That was a big, you remember when the Russians launched Sputnik? That was a big deal, a real big deal for the government, because they realized that their technology was behind the Russians.
Well, it's kind of, it's a sexy idea thinking about that. I mean, I'm sitting here in my office staring at my 2001 A Space Odyssey poster. There's a reason I have that on my wall here, or the one for this island Earth. I would, space fiction is something I'm really attracted to, but I'm also aware that there are a lot of things that are depicted in all of these things. I mean, 2001 is an example where what they show you is something that feels kind of credible, kind of true in a very poetic sense. You and I talked earlier, and you mentioned Arrival before we started the podcast.
Right, a very good movie.
And Arrival is a movie that shows a fairly credible depiction of what an alien species might actually be like. That they would look like us or act like us.
They're not going to come in speaking really English with a California accent, like you see in a lot of the movies.
That whole movie is about the challenge of communication with a species that is so alien from us.
And that's the whole problem with messages from outer space. It's like, they may not be using a radio, or they're not going to have the internet, since we don't have any fiber that long, but
yeah, they may be bombarding us with messages that we can't read. Have no idea. We can't even see them, maybe.
It may be all those Geico
apparatus to see them.
It may be all those Geico commercials you see on TV. That's actually aliens trying to communicate in their own language. And we're just going, what? What? I don't understand that at all. Or that's my approach anyway. it's that damn lizard.
And kind of what I'm coming around to is there's also we have projected a lot of our assumptions about outer space and aliens and so forth onto this UFO phenomenon that's been going on for a while. We assume that these, because they're coming in from the sky, that they must be coming from other planets and visiting us or whatever. But there have been researchers, I think Jacques Vallée is one, and John Keel, the guy who wrote about Mothman. I think both of those guys, I recall reading things by them where they said that they weren't so sure about the extraterrestrial hypothesis, and they really had got to a point after much study where it's like, this is clearly happening. We do not know what it is. We have no idea. Is it interdimensional? Is it some other life form that lives on this planet that we just don't get to see? Maybe they don't want us to see them. Except out of the corner of the eye, so to speak.
Yeah, there's been a lot of conjecture about the fact that very little of our planet's oceans have been actually explored, and there have been a lot of UFO reports that originate not from, you know, it coming down out of the sky, but it came up out of the water. And there have been a number of fairly well-documented spottings of that kind of craft. So it could be anything. It could be, you know, our crazy uncle who's living under the sea and invented a nice spaceship. Who knows what it is?
Aquaman.
Aquaman could be having a side gig, you know.
There's a great science fiction film about that thing called The Abyss, which is about aliens who live in the ocean and not in outer space. And it was pretty compelling, you know. I still like to watch that film over and over again. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, you know, we have no idea where these things, what they are, where they're coming from. But it's nice to study them. It's nice to talk about it. It's the only way you're going to get an answer is exploring it and getting people to talk about any subject, but, you know, UFOs for one, or Mothman or anything. You know, if you just laugh at it or say, oh, that's just crazy, it can't happen here. You know, you never say it can't happen here because it always seems to.
Well, our senses are limited. We can't see or hear. We can't see everything within the visible spectrum. We can't hear all sounds. There's sounds that are outside the range of our hearing. And there certainly may be phenomena that is hard for us to see and hard for us to comprehend. I think about, I'm sure you recall this. There's a video. People would show this video and say, keep an eye on the ball those guys are passing around. I think it'll be like a basketball or something that's being passed around a lot. And you watch the video, and then somebody says, now, did you see the gorilla? No, there wasn't a gorilla in there. And then they go back and they show you that actually in the video, a guy in a gorilla suit walked through the video. You didn't see him because you weren't looking for him.
Yeah, well,
you weren't looking at him.
Yeah, observation.
And he should have been obvious.
Yeah, when you talk to any police detective, and they'll tell you that firsthand witnesses, you know, people on the scene are not all that reliable because it depends on how excited they are, how drunk they are, what they've been smoking earlier in the evening. There are all sort of things that can skew your observation to where you say, oh, yeah, I saw that, or I didn't see that. And you really have to look into these situations because the eyewitnesses are not always really credible. It's more credible these days with everyone having a camera. Now, the camera observations are a little easier to document and confirm that, yeah, that really happened.
The deep fakes are possible now.
Yeah, now we're getting into even more sketchy territory. Deep fakes are frightening, actually, when you think about the things that could be done with a good deep fake. Most of them that are up, obvious that they scotch tape somebody's head on a picture of somebody else, but
I could be a deep fake.
Well, you are deep, you're a deep individual, but fake, I don't know. I've known you long enough to have already confirmed that, you are a substantial individual.
Strange, but substantial.
Yeah, I can't talk about strange. Yeah, that's my middle name. But I just enjoy talking about this stuff because, back to when we were doing Zodiac News, we got a lot of interesting conspiracies, cattle mutilations. I covered that. That was very strange. But one thing that disturbed me was there was the report, and we talked with Mark Deary about it, about Edward Gorey being at the Dugway Proving Grounds when they were doing nerve gas testing up there, and all the sheep nearby got killed. And we got reports like that, and they were in the same area as Dugway Proving Grounds. And, of course, the government was saying, wasn't us. We don't do that. We don't have nerve gas. We don't do that sort of stuff. And there's all these farmers going, I got 3,000 dead sheep, damn it. So I enjoyed looking into stuff like that, but there were a lot of wacky ones. Like someone said, well, I found my dog run over. I think it was aliens. We're like, okay, Skippy, call me back later.
That would be a pretty low-flying alien aircraft. It would run over a dog.
Yeah, and it had, had Goodyear tire tracks on its back. Try again.
I'm trying to think of a specific UFO sighting. I just wonder, there have been some recent revelations of unidentified aerial phenomena viewed and in at least one case filmed by military personnel.
There have been a number of those.
And those have been big stories, though it's a little hard to, I mean, you see the film or the video and it's a little bit hard to make out what you're seeing. People describe seeing things that seem very, very clear, but there's not a whole lot of really good video, which is odd since people are still seeing a lot of UFOs and they're carrying cameras in their pockets now and could make video of a UFO. And you would think that we would see something with a little higher resolution than we've actually seen. We'd see things other than these sort of like very distant like lights. And somebody says, oh, it looked like it was a mile long or something. You don't see those.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that has concerned me about a lot of the photographic movie film videos that have been taken, and they do most all of them look pretty bad. But I think back to when I was working as a reporter, I carried a camera, and I thought I had a picture of when they arrested Patty Hearst in San Francisco, and I was out there with a big gaggle of reporters waiting for her to be brought out of the basement at the police department to take her off to whatever federal facility they were going to, and I was standing there, and I saw her, and I aimed, and I got a mess. It was just like, I had high-speed film, a right setting, but it just didn't happen. So that sort of thing does happen, even with great equipment. I thought it was a pretty great camera. But I've had that experience a number of times. It's like, I've got a perfect shot, but it's like, oh, it's garbage. So that happens. But you would think there'd be a lot more quality representations out there. But some of the stuff I saw, the Travel Channel did an interesting series of military UFO spottings, and they had some of the radar data, and they had some of the cockpit camera footage from some of their encounters, but still those were pretty sketchy as well. It's, you know, they come up where the radar says the UFO is, and there's nothing.
I actually have a Patty Hearst-related story.
Well, go.
You remember William and Emily Harris?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were the ones that were busted with Patty.
So we were sometime after all of that happened, and while they were kind of in the air, you know, they were on the run, and we were living in San Marcos. And we went to a laundromat in San Marcos one night, and there were a couple of people there, a guy and apparently his wife, and man, the guy just couldn't shut up. And he was talking about how, oh yeah, we had some connection with the Symbionese Liberation Army, that stuff that was all over the news and all that. And he went on and on about that, and I thought he was a little bit of a crank.
Sounds like a crank. Wants to
later
get arrested.
I saw a picture of William and Emily Harris, and it was them.
Oh, good. No wonder they got busted. Yeah, yeah.
That was my UFO sighting.
Well, my Patty Hearst thing was, I had a friend. He was married to a good friend of mine in Berkeley, and he'd just gotten out of prison. He was in the same prison as Field Marshal Sin Q. What was his name? Donald DeFries, whatever the name was.
Yeah,
he was in Vacaville prison with him, and you know, he knew a lot about, you know, the people that were part of his inner circle, and so the FBI started taking interest in this guy, and he lived behind my friend Dave McQueen's house. Dave was the news director at KSAN FM in San Francisco, and so we hung out a lot, you know, covering the Patty Hearst story, and so this guy got ordered to show up at and talk to the FBI. So, you know, McQueen got his attorney to do it at his office, and we didn't really identify ourselves other than, you know, our names. And these two FBI agents were there, and they were just pumping our friend Jerry with, you know, for everything I hoped he had, and he wasn't, you know, going to talk. He didn't want to die because everybody was thinking that if you said anything about the SLA, that they were going to come and get you, and that probably was the case. But, you know, these FBI agents were going on and on, and McQueen and I couldn't believe the stuff they were saying, because obviously they didn't check to see that we were both journalists, that we were just two weirdo hippies that were in this office with our buddy. And you got some great news stories out of that. They said there's a huge money reward if you could give us anything to get Patty Hearst back or to get hold of the SLA. And they would say, anything, you know, we'll find money for you, you know, anywhere we can get it. You know, you give us the information, we'll make it worth your while. And he's like, no, I don't want to die. And, yeah, they finally left. But it was very interesting to see these guys in action. They were nothing like the movie FBI guys. These guys, they were clueless, because why would you say that sort of shit in front of a couple of local journalists who are covering the story? You think they'd go, who are these guys? No, nope, they didn't care. They just wanted to get the job done, I guess.
Did they look anything like Ephraim Zimbalist?
Not even close.
Or David Duchovny?
They looked more like the guy from Charlie's Angels. Well, I forget what his name was. But they were very nondescript. And of course, they had the cheap shoes, Buster Brown-style shoes, cheap suits. And they even wore fedoras. And I'm like, you guys still wear hats?
Were they dressed entirely in black?
No, they were more like pinstripe and plaid. Yeah, they were not real stylish looking guys.
Men in black, I don't think
they got paid a lot. Yeah,
did you ever read the Mothman prophecies?
No, I had moths attack some of my prophecies in my closet, but no Mothman.
Now, this was John Keel's book. It was originally published by Saturday Review Press back in the day. God, I read it many, many years ago, and I probably don't remember it with a great deal of clarity, but he was giving an account of he investigated UFOs and strange occurrences and that sort of thing, and he was onto this thing about how people were sighting this creature that looked kind of human, but it had wings, you know, and they would see it flying along. And that's why they referred to it as Mothman. And while he was investigating it, there was a bridge collapse. I think this was in Virginia. I'd have to look these things up. But it was a pretty fascinating story. And one part of that story was he was one of the first people to talk about men in black. He was being visited by men in black who were appeared to be from some government agency and were asking him a bunch of questions, but they were also a little weird, you know.
Sure, at one time, Lee Jones.
It was not, nor Will Smith, either one of them. No. It wasn't Chris Hemsworth.
Well, you know, you talk about Mothman. There's one urban legend that seems to be universal, the Hook Man. Do you remember hearing about the Hook Man in Big Spring? You're out parking with your significant other in a dark, remote place, and of suddenly the Hook Man comes up with his arm replaced by a hook, or sometimes he's holding like a meat hook, but it's the Hook Man, and they get away just in time, and when they get home, they find the hook embedded in their trunk.
Yeah, dangling in the car, yeah.
And I've had people, I repeated that to a friend. He said, that happened in my hometown. I've had other people, yeah, I knew some guys that said that. It's like, okay, that guy is either a franchise operation or he really gets around.
The Hook Man. Well, you know, I guess it's what they refer to as an urban legend.
Definitely urban. Only we weren't urban. It was also a rural legend.
I'm looking up urban legends. But let's see, urban legends, Hook Man. Here we go. I knew that Wikipedia would have something on
of
this.
Of course.
An urban legend about a killer with a pirate-like hook for a hand attacking a couple in a parked car. In many versions of the story, the killer is typically portrayed as a faceless, silhouetted old man wearing a raincoat and a rain hat that conceals most of his features, especially his face. Sounds like Freddy Krueger, right?
Where do you think Freddy came from? Some Hollywood writer heard the Hook Man story. He's like, oh, that'd make a nice movie.
Oh, apparently the reason this thing spread around the way it did is it says it was reprinted in the advice column Dear Abby in 1960.
Okay.
But let's see if we can find that. The origins of the hook legend are not entirely known, though according to folklorist and historian Jan Harald Brunvand, the story began to circulate sometime in the 1950s in the U.S.
Yeah, that's when I heard it.
It became widespread amongst American teenagers by 1959 and continued to expand into the 60s. Snopes writer David Mickelson has speculated that the legend might have roots in real-life Lover's Lane murders, such as the Texarkana Moonlight murders.
Oh, I didn't hear about that one.
Well, that's something we should... I don't know whether this relates to UFOs or not.
Generation, you know, Gen Z, or maybe even Gen X, I guess it would be, had their own Hook Man, of course, Edward Scissorhands. You know, they had to be updated, so no, you know, old-fashioned hook. We put some scissors on him.
Let's see. I'm looking at this Texarkana Moonlight Murders. A series of unsolved murders and other violent crimes committed around Texarkana in the spring of 1946 by an unidentified serial killer known as the Phantom Killer or the Phantom Slayer. The killer is credited with attacking 8 people within 10 weeks, 5 of whom were killed. They happened on weekends. The first two victims, Jimmy Hollis and Mary Larry, survived. The first double murder, which involved Richard Griffin and Polly Ann Moore, happened 4 weeks later. The second double homicide involving Paul Martin and Betty Jo Booker occurred exactly 3 weeks after the first murders. This sounds like an X-File.
Yeah. Where was Ted Cruz when all this was going on? I want to know. He gets around. I don't mean that, Mr. Cruz. Tell your attorneys to go away. It's a joke. But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff out there. And I hope we can get some people to, you know, if you're listening to this and you have an interesting urban legend, or if you saw a UFO, or...
Or were kidnapped by a UFO.
If a Mothman ate your sweater, I mean, we're your guys. Come on down. info@plutopia.io. That's the central nervous center.
And our Twitter account is @plutopia, and I think we have it set up to accept direct messages if you want to message us there.
Yeah, if you want to massage us. We're not proud to... Anyway,
we may become the 21st century Art Bell.
Nah, nobody can outdo Art. You know, for one thing, we're not in Pahrump, Nevada. I mean, come on. If you're not in Pahrump, you're not at the top.
We're not in
of
the high desert.
I don't think anyone will ever replace Art. And
we would have to get a double wide first thing and set up a studio in it.
I can find plenty of those double wides around there. These days, they're a dime a dozen in Central Texas. They're giving them away.
So have we run out of time, Scoop?
Well, yeah, we're at the 55-minute mark, so I think we just need to tell people what we need them to do if they have a conspiracy, if they want to even start one. You know, if they're planning to start a conspiracy, we'd like to be on the ground floor. We'll come out.
Yeah, we'll be looking for your emails, definitely.
Yeah.
And we also invite you to pay attention to the various things that we do.
And we do a lot.
Which include this podcast.
And we do a live broadcast every Thursday. We started on YouTube, and we link it to Facebook. And you can also see the replays of that on our YouTube channel. Just look for Plutopia News Network. And that's us.
We have a radio show every week called Radio Free Plutopia, which is not just us babbling, but also some pretty great music, mostly rock and roll, jazz, and some world music. And what else? What other things do we play?
You name it, we play. I play a lot of electronica, anime music. Yeah, I like a lot of the foreign rock. You name it, we'll play it within reason. You know, no Celine Dion, unfortunately, and Debbie Gibson's definitely out. And
I've been thinking about playing some of my Celine Dion on there.
Well, then I'll be forced to bring out my Osmond Brothers and fight back. So we could have a cheese fest. You know, get our cheesiest favorites out there. I've got some real cheesy ones. So be careful what you do, because I might hit you with a cheese fest. So, John,
thanks.
This is a lot of fun. I enjoy talking about this stuff. It reminds me of the good old days when I was at Conspiracy Center.
Yeah, I mean, we are kind of a conspiracy theory ourselves, aren't we?
I'm always a theory. I don't know how real I am. I'm in the theoretical.
You know, we have merchandise. We have a mug and a T-shirt that you can order from our website. But I just realized we should see if we could have, like, branded tinfoil hats.
I'm working on that. You know, I have a Stetson covered in tinfoil. So that's going to be my new fashion statement. I have my hat. Everyone get that tinfoil, aluminum foil, actually. It's no longer tin. Aluminum foil works just as well. Just form a good one, show it, send us a picture of you and your tinfoil hat, and we'll see if we can select a candidate for the official Plutopia tinfoil hat.
So thanks, Scoop.
And thank you, Mr. John.
Dogs flew spaceships.
The Aztecs invented the vacation.
Men and women are the same sex.
Our forefathers took drugs.
Your brain is not the boss.
Yes,
that's right.
Everything you know is wrong.